Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, Ross Lyon named in the Freo harassment claim. We pull apart what was a fantastic derby and also congestion, what we can do about it.
That was out of bounds.
I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It is time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. Tuesday morning, brought to you by Tab Touch. With me in the studio, Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian. Quarters.
Duff.
Saving grace of the weekend was the Western Derby, I think.
Yeah, I reckon there was some pretty ordinary footy played, but that was a crackerjack game. That's as good as a game I've seen in a long time. Privileged to be there, hear the crowd involvement, and I reckon they were 8 points better, the Eagles.
They were about that, yeah. I think the loss of Michael Walters...
Turned the game, didn't it?
Yeah. Limited Fremantle's ability to hit them on the scoreboard.
Lots to like about Freo, I really think so. And I guess you've got to say on the back of that, Eagles play finals now. It's good. They're going to have to do something horribly wrong not to.
I think, like I said before the game, and I might have even said this to you, if the Eagles win, they play finals.
Yep.
If Fremantle wins, they can play finals.
Yep.
I think it's more than that for West Coast now. I think we overreacted to the last preseason game at Joondalup.
Yeah, we did.
That was so bad.
It was a shocker,
day.
Though.
It was a shocker.
It was.
But when
it's hard not to overreact to a performance like that.
When you look through the A graders on their list, there's about 8 or 9, and yeah, they are all hardened. They're hardened by the 2015 yeah, grand final loss. They're hardened by that 4, 5, 6 years in the system where they haven't tasted premiership success. You know, you look at the ones who I think have taken a step up this year. Apart from the fact that Nat Nui's come back in great nick, Scott Lysette, who I thought
was terrific.
I thought he was unlucky not to win the medal, Scott Lysette.
Yeah, I had him two.
Yep.
I actually had Lachie Neal with three.
Yeah.
I had Shannon Hearn with three. I definitely had Shannon Hearn with three. I had Lysett with two and I had Neal with one. I think they got it pretty well right. You can jumble the numbers up, but I was pretty happy with that result in the end. Yeah, I know. Gee, I've never seen him. He was tackling like a little fella, wasn't he, Scotty Lysett?
The number of times Fremantle were nearly out of a scrimmage situation and Scott Lysett did something to influence the contest and either turn the ball back into a disputed ball situation or turn the ball into a West Coast possession.
Yep.
I thought it was absolutely profound,
yep,
his influence on the game. Shannon Hearn just doesn't make mistakes. Brad Shepherd, great lockdown defender now. These are all guys that, if anything, Quarters have taken a step up.
Yeah, well, I'd put Redden certainly on his performance the other day.
Absolutely.
And Sheed as well.
Yep.
I mean, they've taken a step up. I'm going to mention Chera too, because I thought when the game was still there to be won late in the game, he was right at the coalface, Chera.
Yep.
I think they've got a ripper there, Freo. It just showed a lot of poise and beautiful lateral movement too, but he's a class act, that kid.
Yeah, and their kids all bogged in. You know, Brayshaw kicked that big last quarter goal. Croden just keeps going hard.
He does.
The content. And from on the flip side, Jake Waterman, the two big third quarter goals.
Yep.
Were big in the context of the game.
They didn't do anything wrong, Freo. They just weren't quite as polished when it counted for long enough. And that's about it, really, for me. I think they've got nothing to be ashamed of. It was a very good performance from Freo. So onwards and upwards for them, I think.
Yes. Now, we should deal with the elephant in the corner of the room, of course, which is the Ross Lyon has been named as the senior Fremantle
yep,
club official at the centre of sexual harassment claims, which have been circulating since December last year.
Yep.
Probably.
Well, the name's out there. We've known the name for a long time. We've chosen not to divulge it because yep, it is a confidentiality situation, which we respect. It's out there now. You know, I'd like a little bit more transparency from the AFL. This is my opinion on the whole process. I'm okay with the confidential nature of the woman's name. I don't think there's any need for her to be named. I'd just like some more transparency from the AFL. I guess the question is the AFL equipped to handle these situations?
Well, I don't think it is. And I think if we look at the three that the three recent ones. There's a Nathan Broad one.
Yep.
My take on this is that it either has to be complete. Every single incident, and each incident may be different,
mm-hmm.
but every single incident has to be either completely transparent, so we know all that happened and how it happened, or it needs to be completely confidential. Otherwise, you get into these ugly Rocky Horror Show scenarios like Craig McLaughlin and his co-star, where you get he said, she said, two versions of the truth, and they're basically throwing allegations at each other. And I think that's messy, and I don't think that serves any purpose.
Yep.
The Nathan Broad one was transparent from the outset because he circulated the photo.
Yeah.
So it was a public event from the very start, and that was the issue, that he basically, without this girl's consent, circulated photos in the aftermath of the grand final, and therefore that was completely improper, inappropriate, a violation of the girl's rights, and therefore there had to be action taken.
Yep.
The Sam Pell Pepper one, Quarters, it bothers me when the AFL steps in and tries to play the role of policeman.
Well, it bothers me that Port has not seen a report of the actually has not seen the report in full yet. And it bothers me that he was in there with no legal representation. He had a Port official with him. I think it was messily handled, the whole Pal Pepper situation. And you can see from the aftermath with David Koch and, you know, the AFL. I'm not sure if the AFL needs to be equipped to do this. I'm not sure if they should be outsourcing this.
Well, now he's got a he might not have had legal representation at the start, but he ended up with a Melbourne Cup field of lawyers. You know, he had a heap of QCs around him. To me, in that situation, it is either serious enough for police involvement,
yep.
or I'm not sure how we get to a three-match suspension out of an event that was...
It was pulled out of the air, that three-match suspension.
Yep.
And I think there is an element of a scapegoat here.
Yeah, I just don't see how you get three matches out of an event that the girl opted not to go to the police
yep.
with.
Yep.
She had absolutely every right, if she felt seriously assaulted or violated or treated inappropriately, to summon the security staff at the venue and ask them to call the police and basically kickstart an investigation into this whole thing.
Yep.
She chose not to do that. And once you get to that point, it becomes a completely different matter. It then becomes a matter between her and the club, basically, because that's the direction she headed in. And then the AFL becomes involved as this third party trying to play the role of behavioural policeman, and I think that's incredibly messy. And I think that if this were mid-September and Port Adelaide were about to play a final and this happened, and Port Adelaide said, you know, we're going to court.
Yeah.
I'm tipping they'd win.
Yeah, I think they would.
I'm tipping they'd win, and I'm tipping they'd win hands down on this. I just don't think that one is a sustainable position. And the Ross Lyon one, as I mentioned, I think that in situations like this, you either have to have total confidentiality or total transparency. And the problem with the Ross Lyon one is that they're caught in the middle.
Yeah. I think in this instance, it's transparent. But I still say... I'm happy for the woman to remain anonymous. I think she should. I think that's the way to go there.
Well, but I agree.
Transparency with the facts is what we require.
I think that's why in situations like this, they try to make it completely confidential.
Well, workplaces, it happens every day across Australia, everywhere, a lot of workplaces. This is what happens.
Yeah.
And there's a resolution. In this instance, it was a financial resolution.
Yeah, well... As I said to you earlier off air, that they're not looking for elephant stamps on their wrist or stars on their homework. They're looking for an outcome, and that is their right. If they believe their professional career has been in somehow hampered by the event, then it is their right to seek an outcome. But let's not kid ourselves. The outcome is money.
Yep.
To help them go forward with their life and to help them move on to their next challenge, whatever that may be. All right, let's
talk footy, Duff.
Let's talk footy. It's a bit draining talking about that other stuff.
It is.
It is a very difficult topic, and it's a topic that's certainly fraught. So what did you make of other matches at the weekend? Apart from, I reckon, the Geelong-Sydney game, which was a great and fierce contest, and the Collingwood-Richmond game, which was a great
Collingwood-Richmond game, there were really two really interesting games. I think Geelong... What came out of that game is, Josh Kennedy's not cooked just yet. 12 clearances in a row in the last quarter, Sydney. Brilliant stuff. And I think Geelong really needs to go out there and get a bullocking ruckman, because clearly they're 18th for clearances, Geelong. And when you've got the midfield they've got, that's not right. So I think that's what came out of that game. And Richmond Collingwood, I felt a bit sorry for Collingwood, really, because I paid a bit of attention to that game. And I think the second half was during the derby, but they were close. They played really well, Collingwood. And I guess this just shows you how good Richmond's going at the moment. You blink and they've won by 42-43. It's unbelievable.
You know what? For both the Richmond-Collingwood game and the Melbourne-Essendon game, I applied a simple formula in my tips. And that was the extra night sleep.
The
difference between the Tuesday night game.
Well, so did I. And one extra sleep when it's such a short break can make all the difference.
Well, when does your body heal and recover most? It does when you're asleep. And if you've had that extra night sleep coming off such a compromised break, I thought that would have a profound effect in the latter stages of both those games, and it did.
It was interesting, Hardwick's comments, that they're the best team that they've played this year. I think Adelaide might have something to say about that. Adelaide, of course, have knocked the Tigers off. I think there was a Hawthorn ran them to 13 points too. But for me, that Hawthorn 13 points, it was a really good effort by Hawthorn, I thought. It felt like there was a bit more of a gulf in that game. I think Collingwood's playing finals now, unless the bottom falls out through injury. They've had a few of those this year. They've still got a few to come back, the Pies, too. Playing really good footy at the moment, and I think for me, they're coming in. They're coming into the eight.
So when Darcy Moore comes back, given the new structure they've got Mason Cox clunking the ball down ahead of the ball. They've got Ben Reid playing sort of mostly at that end of the ground, but a guy who can swing back.
Yep.
Do you go with the preseason plan to play Darcy Moore as the tall defender?
I think you do. I think you might even swing him around. I don't see any reason why you can't have him playing down back, playing through the middle, and then perhaps at times have him up forward when Cox isn't there. I wouldn't have two of them there.
Yeah.
So that's the way I'd play it. I would start him down back, yes. I wouldn't mess with the forward line formula that they've got going at the moment. The Melbourne-Essendon game, I think our concerns over Essendon have been only heightened the last 2 weeks. It's a one-way traffic for Essendon at the moment, and I'm not sure what Woosha does to address it, because I'm not sure if he does have the personnel. It's obviously a highly skilled list, but I'm not sure if he's got the personnel to play 2018 footy.
So 2018 footy is basically the territory game.
It is.
Get the ball in deep, get your pressure forwards to work them over.
And they don't do that.
And score off turn it. They don't do that. John Worsfold is adamant that's the game they're trying to play. So you have to ask the question, do they need to draw a line through a few people that just can't get that done for them? And that may have quite a profound effect on the short-term career prospects of people like Green and McDonald, Tip and Woody, who were supposedly their ground-level pressure forwards but supposedly aren't getting it done at the moment. It may have a profound effect on the way they structure up, because they have Joe Danaher, who's clearly tall marking target.
Yeah, he needs to have a spell down back, or they've got to do something with Joe. He's just devoid of confidence at the moment. And, as Ross Lyon says, you don't buy at the corner shop, but you can certainly earn it. You can earn it back, and I think he just needs a shift, just a change of role. Don't put him in the VFL. Don't give him a spell back there. Keep him in the AFL. Just change it up for him a little bit, I think.
Do they need to play deeper?
Absolutely, he definitely needs to play deeper. But I wouldn't. I would just let him get a kick first. I think that's the most important thing right now for him. I think it's got to that situation.
Yeah, he's in trouble. Maybe run him on the ball. For 5-10 minutes. Each quarter, get him to feel the ball in his hands, get him to feel like he's involved in the game.
And then play deep. Because there was a number of times at the weekend he was running to centre-half forward or to the 50-metre arc, and they just completely overlooked him. So,
you know what the other thing about Essendon is? It's not a great midfield, is it? When they go up against midfields that are potentially powerful, Essendon is like, who is their gun midfielder?
Merritt's a gun. Heppel's a gun. I think Merritt is.
So Ross Lyon's basically signalled to the competition, you tag Merritt.
Yeah. So and you get him. You're right. I don't think the depth is there. But they do have a couple of players at the pointy end, but I think below them, they drop away pretty quickly. You raise a very fair point.
Because Goddard doesn't go there anymore. He plays behind the ball. Job Watson is gone. I was about to say Tim Watson. Yeah. Tim Watson's long gone.
Looked a lot like him.
Yeah. Job Watson is gone, and they probably thought they were ready to cover
Zaharakis as well. I'll put Zaharakis in that bracket.
He's more a forward mid, though, isn't he, Zaharakis? He's a forward who goes in there. And even if Devin Smith gets to a point where he's playing big midfield minutes, he's a forward mid as well. The Bombers don't have those midfield monsters that the other good teams have, and they don't have a real ruck monster to help influence the contest like West Coast has with Nat Nui, like Fremantle has with Sandilands, and like we're thinking Geelong should have, but don't have.
We're probably not giving Melbourne the credit they deserve either. Did you see young Spargo's debut? He looks a lively type.
Good finisher.
Yeah, son of the former
son of Paul.
North. Yeah, good finisher. And I think it was good to see Big Maxi kick straight, but he actually didn't kick straight, did he? A couple of bananas from acute angles there and dealt with one Dill in the crowd pretty well too, I think.
Yeah, and while we're on Dills in the crowd, the bloke at the Derby who
the jumper.
Set the jumper on fire, mate, get a grip.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a grip. You know,
just you've won the game.
As coaches often like to say when they like to put the sport in context, they're not out there curing cancer. So let's not turn it into something it isn't. And that is the very definition of inflammatory behaviour, Glenn.
Yeah, the very definition of it. Well, look, game was played in pretty good spirit. I think the generally, I wasn't out in punterland, but generally it seemed like the crowd behaved in a good fashion. It was a great occasion, the first derby at the new stadium, full of voice, beautiful day, and then some idiot does that.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
Not at all. So a lot to take out of the weekend. I think the Hawthorn St Kilda game was you take nothing out of it. I think Hawthorn's very gettable at the moment. They my boys weren't that special at all. St Kilda were dreadful. I'll tell you what I did take out of it. Geez, Isaac Smith's having some sort of a season.
Oh, he's a beauty. Like, if you can – you get guys that can win some contested ball, you get guys that can run and spread, and you get guys that can finish. You've got a guy that's got all three, and right now Isaac Smith has got all three of those things.
Has been playing at that level for a long time, Isaac Smith, and perhaps hasn't got the recognition he deserves. And Luke Bruce, the other one, having a very good season, second in the Coleman at the moment.
Well, if you give Luke Bruce an opportunity to kick a goal, he kicks a goal, doesn't he? That's his great gift. The Saints quarters. If we look at the worst teams in the competition right now,
you know what?
St Kilda among them.
Well, yes, they are. And if I am a St Kilda supporter and I'm a Carlton supporter, I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic if I'm a Carlton supporter, because I can't see where the nucleus of talent in that St Kilda side, A-grade talent, that's going to lift them.
So what you're...
I think they're just meandering along. I think they've missed the boat.
So you're talking about the lack of A-graders.
I am.
Yeah. So I... Look, Carlisle's probably an A-grader, isn't he?
Not for me. He's approaching A-grade, but he's not there yet.
Because
he's an A-grader, he takes that mark 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'd give Carlisle... I mean, Nat Fyfe is not an A-grader because he misses that shot on goal in the last quarter of the derby.
Different guy.
Good players do have bad moments in games.
He's had a pretty good year, Carlisle. I'm just not ready to accept that he's A grade yet.
Okay. I would say Billings should be an A grader by now, but isn't quite there yet.
No. Jack Seb Stephen. Ross at times.
No.
Geary's a good leader.
Not A.
Stephen.
Not A.
Looks like he needs another couple of sessions in the gym, as does Paddy McCartan.
Paddy McCartan, Paddy McCartan's just trying to establish himself.
Yeah,
in
of
the
course.
Team,
yeah, yeah, he is. So, I mean, and you've got those sort of players below, you know, the Dunstans and just below that tier. I'm just not sure. I look at that side and I'm uninspired. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, they need five players to take a step up. And the ones I would say they need to take a step up, like I think you're being hard on Carlisle. I think Carlisle is an A grader, but Billings, for me, needs to become an A-grader. Blake Akers, by the end of this year, needs to be one we're talking about potentially becoming an A-grader. Seb Ross probably needs to be an A-grader by the end of the year. And if he can't do that with polish and finish, he has to do that with sheer work rate.
Mm.
And Jack Stephen, I think you're right. At his best, he may just be, but right now he's not at his best.
No. So, yeah. Even you look at Brisbane and you look at their list and they're struggling at times this year. But, I have more optimism with their list than and with Carlton's than I do with St Kilda's at the moment.
Yeah. Matty DeBoer.
What a terrific... I liked your column, Duff. Not necessarily, I wouldn't give Freo a cross for getting rid of him because they had players of his type. But GWS needed a Matty DeBoer, and he's fitted in really. He's having a great season. And, you know, wouldn't it be a wonderful story if they went on to win the flag and he was a key component of it?
And not just him. I mean, Brett Deledio and Ryan Griffin.
Oh, I'd love to see, particularly Deledio, given what transpired last September.
Yeah.
They would be great stories.
I think so. That they're labouring, though, aren't they, the Giants? Like, if you talk about the Hawks being gettable at the moment because of their...
Probably gettable in Melbourne. They're labouring, but they're getting the job done. And sometimes you just need to get through these periods and get the job done, and your time will come.
Yeah, I reckon they'll be very anxious for the return of Toby Green and Josh Kelly. I think they're...
Toby Green gives them a new dimension, definitely.
Very much key components. What else came out of the weekend that you like, Quarters?
Port Adelaide, I think, so they're here this week. I think Wingard's a big out for them. That was a good win against North. I think Ben Brown struggled at times, but still kicked four.
Mm.
So we're looking at our All-Australian full forward, as he should have been last year.
Yep.
I think Port get Ryder back this week.
Good chance.
And I think we mentioned this last week, but of all the teams, when you look at removing one player and the impact they have, Ryder is one of those, I think.
So they're here against West Coast on Saturday.
Yes.
Ryder v Nat Nui, that might be worth going a fair way to see.
Ryder v Nat Nui - Lysett.
Yes. He will give them, like, Paddy Ryder will give Port some impetus. That's going to be a pretty good game, I think, that one. I do this thing for the internet, thumbs up, thumbs down at the end of the weekend.
Yep.
I gave North a thumbs down, and I know that's being a bit hard given pre-season expectations. It's just North seems to be one of those teams, every time we start to think, geez, they're going okay, they have a game where they don't go okay.
Yeah.
And I thought there was a bit of that about their game against
Port. That's a fair comment. What do you think about Adelaide? So they're talking about a side that's had its issues and seemed to be weathering the storm pretty well. You know, I think they got Crouch back. Lynch is finding some form. Tarly has certainly had a good year so far. So Adelaide, thereabouts, and doing themselves, I don't think, no any harm. They will get some players back in the near future and, look out.
Yeah, obviously Tex Walker does a bit of a hammy on the weekend. So my worry from Adelaide's perspective is that they have a lot of players coming off compromised pre-seasons. And I just wonder whether – I think that at times they will look okay and at times they will look threatening. I like the fact that they've turned Seedsman into a very viable running back and he's got big meters gained
gained than any other player.
Wayne Miller, who I think we've been waiting for two seasons. I think that the fact that he's had 33 possessions is really encouraging for the Crows.
Led in All-Australian form. Gibbs is slotted in nicely.
But Tex, if they can't get Tex ready to play a big back half of the season... And
so he's come in injured. He's come in injured. In hindsight, didn't play round one.
Yeah.
In hindsight, probably shouldn't have played round two.
And I think they've played Rory Sloane a couple of times when they shouldn't have played.
Yeah, well, he's due back this week too, I think. Well, he's in the mix. So the other player we should mention is Swallow, a good West Australian boy.
He keeps on churning out good games.
Doesn't he? He's having some year. So... Yeah. The coach, Stewie Dew, basically said he's been certainly carried us at the weekend. So, probably should give him some due.
There
you go.
Interestingly, when they got tailed up by West Coast in Perth, the one player Stewie Dew singled out for high praise was David Swallow and basically said he marvelled at the way the guy went about his footy, which is, you know, when a new coach sees that and he comes in with two eyes open, a completely open mind about every player, and that's what he brings up about you. That's a real feather in your cap, I think.
The other thing we should mention is there's been a fair bit of talk about congestion, and I believe the figures are that it is one of the lowest scoring averages certainly in the modern game, since the 60s when they brought in the out of bounds on the full rule.
Yep.
I think it's 80-something points per team per game is the average now. I think we got up to about 97 at the zenith in the early 2000s, early 2010, something around that era. So there's talk of how do we ease congestion? Do we bring in zones? Chris Scott, really interesting, suggests that we should have six on the bench and 16 on the field. I'm not sure what the answer is. I think even if we need an answer, I mean, sometimes you feel like a bit of a dinosaur, Duff, when you talk about the one-on-one contests that you don't see so much of anymore. I do yearn for those, but I'm not sure that is the solution. I think the game's pretty good in that we're still getting plenty of bums on seats. TV ratings are still fantastic, so the game is still very popular. If they're going to do anything, trial them before you bring them in. But I think of all of those suggestions, if we don't reduce interchange and we don't know what impact that's going to have, I don't mind the 16 aside.
You know what I worry about that? Is 16 works for women's footy.
Worked in the VFA.
The AFL, yeah. Well, we're talking about a completely different competition with a completely different skill set. The reason why we look at the skills of AFL players and we think, there's a lot of missed kicks and there's a lot of this and there's a lot of that, is because there are high numbers around the ball and we're asking them to execute really difficult kicks where there's a really narrow margin for error and they're operating under a high level of fatigue. If you go to a point where you open things up and they have space to execute those kicks, I just wonder whether it'll be like the sort of circle work we saw in AFLX. And I don't think that is any more attractive.
There were coaches trialling zones in AFLX, you know, trialling various methods, so because they didn't really care about the results. So.
And the other thing is, if you get to a point where coaches feel they can't defend the whole ground like they do now, then we will have an Uber flood, because they will pick an area of the ground where they can defend and they will choose to fight the battle there. This is what people have to remember. For every action in football, there will be an equal and opposite reaction from coaches, and particularly the defensively minded coaches of the competition. And that's very hard to legislate against, because you have to respect both sides of the game. We want an attacking brand of the game, but we also don't want a game where it's just a series of spot-up kicks down the ground before someone takes a mark inside 50 and takes a shot on goal and kicks the goal and the ball goes back to the centre. Yeah. I don't think that's what we want either. I think let's sort it out. Let's work out who the good teams are and they will find a way through it. I mean, I didn't want to switch off the telly in the last quarter of the Sydney-Geelong game.
No.
When Josh Kennedy went to work at the stoppages. And it was basically a stoppage monster taking control of the game. That was worth watching for me. Maybe I'm different.
No. I'm with you on that one.
You know, he won 7 last quarter clearances, and that was worth watching for me.
Yeah, it restored my faith a little. Not that I'd lost my faith in Sydney, because I am bullish about Sydney still. I think it's their last year that they can win a flag with this group. But you know, when Kennedy rises to that level, you know, I just hope he can sustain it, because it's something worth watching, that is.
Absolutely. He's a monster. There was no Hanbury. There was no Buddy.
By the way, Callum Sinclair has had a fantastic year too. He has had a very good year.
And he's had to, because often
Naismith,
often necessity is the mother of invention.
But he has. He's put his hand up. And he was terrific at the weekend, particularly in the last quarter.
And do they find it easier to score some weeks when Lance Franklin isn't in the team?
Yes, they do. Hawthorn went through this. I'm not saying don't play Buddy. Please don't think I'm saying that. He's a terrific athlete. I'd just like to see him mix it up a bit more, play him up the ground a bit more. And they do from time to time. I think late in his tenure at Hawthorn, that was happening more often than not. So yeah. You don't want a Buddy predictable game.
Yep.
Having said that, He did all right. He was all right in round one here.
Yeah, if you can get that isolation in that matchup.
Pretty hard to get the isolation.
Well, teams just won't let you have it, will they?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they managed to do it against West Coast in round one, but they managed to do it. They managed to get the one-on-one inside the attacking 50. I agree with you. Shift him up the ground, play him behind the ball a bit, play him on a wing, get him taking the ball inside attacking 50. He is, by the accounts of his teammates at both clubs that he's played at, Hawthorn and Sydney, a truly elite field kick, as well as a long shot and goal.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So use that skill as well. All right, Quarters, I think we've done enough for today. We'll be back on Thursday when we'll talk about the upcoming games.
How many did you get, by the way?
I think I got six. I haven't actually sat down.
I got eight. I'll put
them.
My hand up. I got eight. I'll claim it because I haven't had a great start to the year, so I'll claim eight.
You would put your hand up if you got eight.
Well,
I don't blame you for that.
Geelong let me down, but I must say we did muse on this game, and we did say, oh, tempted to pick Sydney here because they'd won their last two. They've now won three in a row at Geelong, so I'm happy to get that one wrong.
Yeah, well played. We'll be back on Thursday for Tab Touch, and we hope to talk to you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.